This episode is brought to you by VW Trends Magazine. Check them out for all the latest trends in the VW scene at www.vwtrendsmagazine.com.
Good morning and welcome to the show. My name is Sean Smith.
And my name is Prescott Phillips, and this is Brew City Bug Talk.
Welcome back to the show. How's it going today, Prescott?
It's going really good. Sun shining today.
Oh, yeah. It's a nice day out in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yeah. I couldn't believe what we started off with the day doing.
Yeah. So what he's talking about is I ended up on a whim. I bought a Porsche 914 because why not? And of course, I'm cheap. So I find the cheapest Porsche 914 I can find. And of course, the one I buy, the motor's blown on it. So I did the scouring of the internets and I found a local, well, not so much local, Green Bay, which is like 2 hours from us. A guy up there had a Porsche 914 motor for me.
Thank you to the Folkmans, junior and senior.
So I went up there yesterday, picked it up, brought it here to Prescott, and we were out there.
Yeah, he shows up with this thing in the back of his Honda CRV on a skid. I'm like, how are we going to get this out of here? It's just me and you, dude. They had a fork truck to put it in, but
it's so, not that heavy. No, it's ugly, but it's not that heavy.
Yeah, we slid her out of there on some wood and onto a cart, and that's what we were putzing with this morning. We're trying to spin it over at least.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that it at least fires up and runs somewhat before I start tearing out the motor on the other one because...
Yeah, the other one dropped a valve.
Yeah. You
know, a seat. Big surprise in a Type 4, especially a 914.
That thing was smashed, though. Like, that head was not salvageable.
No. So. The seat falls off, and it just self-destructs.
Yeah, so. It was bad. I thought about just switching out the head, and then I pulled it apart, and I looked inside the jug, and there's some scoring in there. The piston has a little bit of a dent in there. I'm like,
Don't bother.
Yeah.
it was a 1.7 anyways.
Yeah. Who cares? Whatever, but... Oh, well, that was my big adventure for this week. What's going on with you? Anything exciting coming up?
No, we're getting ready for sick summer, so I'm working on a drag and drive car. Took that for a beat run yesterday and buzzed it up $7,000 a couple times and went through all the gears, and that's looking pretty good. So
she's all together?
Yeah.
Now, are you doing any kind of tuning on it or anything like that, or are you just...
We're going to street tune a little bit with the AFR, and I want to go to the track at least once and get 2-3... quarter mile passes on this setup because it's all fresh. So
then
we'll be off to the races, off to sick summer.
Very cool. That's exciting. That's coming up here. Summer's almost here, which is exciting because I am sick of sitting in the house. I want to get to some car shows and
want to go and do stuff with car people.
Yeah, this weekend, I mean, obviously this podcast is going to come out way after, but this weekend we have the Pegasus has their Cars and Coffee, so which is like the first show that we're actually going to. So that's kind of kicking off our summer. And then then Sunday, we'll be down in Illinois for the NEVA swap meet.
NEVA swap meet at the DuPage County Fairgrounds there. They have an indoor Volkswagen only swap meet, which is, it's gaining some traction. So that'll be exciting.
And since this is coming out in the future, thank you to all those that came out and saw us this weekend at the NEVA show and said hello and had a sticker.
So. Yeah, and got a sticker.
All right, so what do we have going on today? Who is on our show today?
Today we have a special guest on the show.
Special guest as always. What is our special guest name?
Our special guest is Bill Alexander, and he's the head of, I don't know if he's the head, but he's all about Driven Racing Oil. So I want you to introduce yourself,
welcome
Bill.
Welcome to the show, Bill.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Oh, man, how's it going, guys? Yeah, like you said, I'm Bill Alexander. I'm the general manager and tribologist at Driven Racing Oil. That and a dollar get you a cup of coffee at the gas station, but that's who I am.
Well, you're the guy that answers all the questions.
It's awesome. I'm so happy to be on this podcast, especially being an air-cooled VW podcast.
Yeah, it's a tight group here.
It is, and I do a lot. You know, in this job, I do a lot of big block Chevy, small block Chevy, turbo LS, you know, all that stuff. And this is close to my roots and my love. So this is for me. This isn't work today. This is just hanging out, and it's awesome.
Well,
so,
awesome. We're glad to have you on the show.
Yeah,
be an exciting one. Yeah, we're all right. So we'll hit you off with the first question. What got you into Volkswagens?
Oh man. So I grew up in Northern California in the 80s. Well, just like probably everybody else, a couple of my buddies, one of my best friends since first grade, a guy named Jim Morato, you know, who's always been kind of active in the VW scene. He bought a 67 Bug and we took it apart and his dad got furious and we had, you know, how to put it back together. So from there, you know, it was just, that's where it started. And then my first job, I worked at a shop, a VW shop in Pleasanton, California called Beetle Power. Beetle Power is still there in existence. Wow. And yeah, after school and all day Saturday, my job was to you know, it's funny. These conversations always make me feel so old.
Join the club.
Yeah. So back in the day, you know, in Northern California, that people were still dailying, you know, 600 bucks. And, you know, so we would rebuild 5-6 motors a week. And so my job was to pull the motors out, tear them down, clean all the sheet metal, paint all the sheet metal, and then do the setup, which was for the owner to come in and build the motor. So I had this, he was very, very detail oriented. So I had to pull the motors apart, clean them all up, do all my stuff, and then lay out every nut and bolt in a sequential order so that he didn't even have to turn around when he went to build a motor.
Oh, wow.
He'd reach to the next part and it'd be there the way he liked to build it. So that's what I did. And I did that for a long time. It was kind of cool because it really did teach us how important cleanliness, like detail and things when it comes to engine building are. And, you know, so I was, you know, still working on my first car, which was my 64 Bug that I bought for $300. And the motor blew up in the driveway. You know, it's always stories like that. But
that was your high school car?
That was my high. Yeah. It was one of many. My parents were on this podcast, they'd tell you I've had probably 100 VWs in my life, maybe more.
Wow.
And some of them were only there for a very short time while I pulled parts off of them and then, you know, traded them to a buddy for a set of wheels or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Sometimes you need a motor and you find a whole car. Right. So now you own a whole car. It's just for the motor.
Exactly. And back in those days, there were still plenty of them around. Sure. I mean,
they were cheap. Yeah, they were like cheap enough where you could buy a car just to take the motor out and scrap the car.
Yeah. Or parts out what's left of it.
That's my biggest gripe that we talk about nowadays is that everything's so expensive. And I'm like, why? Why do I have to be born in this era where everything is so expensive?
Yeah.
Oh, going back in the day story, like you say, I mean, I used to buy 63 VW Bugs that were solid. Northern California, you know, $350, you could get it from the, you know, $400. And you know, goes along because, you know, recently I just picked up this oval window behind me and, man, I can't believe what I paid for this car. You know, like I still go to myself, like, I could have bought 5 of these, you know.
Yeah. And they would have been nice and I should have just kept them.
So I kind of did that. And then after that, me and my best friend Jim Morato, and we got jobs at the Buggy House in Northern California in Hayward, and that was a performance shop. So that was selling parts, you know, Weber carbs and parts, and you know, Jerry that, you know, ran the shop. He did high performance builds, and so for us that was like dream job number one. We got jobs at Buggy House, and
well, yeah, you can't work there and drive a stock Beetle.
And it was great because, you know, we learned so much. That was the whole thing, you know, when, you know, you're still after school job, you were learning, you know, you know, we got to go to, you know, we'd always go to the drag races in Sacramento, you know, go and race the car that the shop had built and, you know, go to Pleasanton for the big events. And I would actually, it's funny, but I would sell back in those days, man. I sold a lot of chrome louvered
firewalls. Yeah.
Running boards, firewalls. I sold a lot of one piece window kits.
Oh, yeah. Just the worst, you know, stuff ever.
You know, as we got older and more serious, we got into building, you know, more high dollar stuff and everything. And then I always tell this story is I kind of got out of it. You know, I started building other cars and doing things. But I've always had a love there, you know, and always going to build another VW. And, you know, kind of I still have a set of Italian 48 IDA Webers that I have carted with me since I was 20 to every place I've lived, you know. And my wife will be like, what are these? Is this junk? Let's just get rid of these. But I'm like, no.
Are those going on the oval window?
No, which is great, right? Because I've carried them with me, and no, they're not. I'm going fuel injection. But anyway, so that was that. But what really got me is, well, fast forward up to, I'm 53, so, you know, a few years ago, I start working at Driven, and I start doing this, and, you know, I do a lot of events. We do all the sick events. You know, we bring our stuff out there. We have a tent. You know, we talk to the guys, and I watch around the corner, and there's this bug sitting there, a 67 bug. And I thought, man, is that cool? And it just blew my back. Like, start talking to the guy. It's Lester, the guy down in Florida. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of drive and drag stuff. And then I meet Richie Webb with the convertible.
Yep.
And I'm just behind these guys. And I'm like, man, you know. And so I got drugged back in. So that's kind of how I met you, Prescott. Because of,
yeah,
I'm like, you know, what's changed in the last 15 years? Well, a lot of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. Now you can buy, you know, you can just go on the internet and buy a 200 horsepower motor, and it might be in parts or it might be complete, or you might get on a list, but you can do it. It's all scienced out already. This stuff's been in process for 50 years.
And like I said, it's great because I think we even had this conversation, but I remember back in the day when I wanted to build a motor, I had to first find a case, right?
Yeah.
You remember finding a case?
Okay, a decent case.
And then shipping it, you know, to Rimco or somebody, yep, and having those, you know, whatever. And I think that was one of the greatest conversations I had with you initially, is I was like, wow, you can just buy a case now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's expensive, yeah, but it bolts. You can just throw the stuff in.
Yeah. And going back to what you said, I love IDAs, but, you know, I'm seeing this everywhere. So remember, in my job, like I said, we deal with, if there is a car enthusiast, you know, into Studebakers, into, you know, Mini Coopers, into big LS Power or Gen 3 Hemis now, and all that, we get them all. And what's you know, what I learned when I came back to kind of the VW scene after drag week is, like everything else, the horsepower numbers, the normal horsepower numbers now are so much higher than they were.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that 200 horse, yeah, that's fine. But I think, man, back then, we didn't even know. I mean, just a bunch of kids in our garage, we never would have even dreamed of that. Yeah. You know,
yeah, that you were going to drive around in a street legal 12-second bug.
It is cool. And, you know, drag and drive is really changing things. Like, it's weird, but, man, the community there is so good. And,
oh, it just supercharged the whole. Drag racing was kind of like floundering, you know. You got bracket racers, and you got heads up guys, you know, that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, drag and drive comes along, and then boom, everybody's excited about drag racing.
Right. And what I think what's great about drag and drive is, I've always said in the car hobby or racing, whatever there is, when it becomes not achievable for the regular guy in his garage, when it gets to the point you got to put in so much money and so much time to do it, it kind of starts to fall off or whatever. But what I see in drag and drive is people that have drag cars, and maybe they don't get them out as much as they want to or whatever, and they think, hey, you know what, I could put headlights in this thing, I could do this, and I could actually go do something with it for a week and see if I can make it. You know, that should always be your first goal for drag and drive, is can you?
Well, that's what you're doing with a Volkswagen. You're not winning any class or anything. You're surviving the week. That's drag and drive. So let's...
Back to the questions. What is Driven Racing Oil? So, like, how did you get involved in it? Where did it come from? Give us a little background about it.
All right. Well, so Driven was started in 2000 by Joe Gibbs Racing. So it was started in NASCAR. And it goes back to, you know, API oils. So the API oils are off-the-shelf oils, as we call them. Back in that time, they limited the ZDDP, the zinc in the oils, for modern vehicles. The problem was that anybody that had a flat tabbit cam pretty quickly found out that ZDDP is really important, right? And so they were having a lot of cam failures, even in NASCAR. They brought in some chemists and some people and put it together, some formulas to make some specific oils to help, you know, the camshafts in the NASCAR program live. From there, it kind of grew. And then they decided, well, we're a NASCAR team. We're not in oil business. So they, you know, sold the business on to, you know, the group that owns it now, Comp Cams at one point. We had the same ownership as Comp and all that. We've stayed focused on making racing oils. And a lot of people go, well, what's a racing oil? Maybe that's not the best term for what we do, but that's what people understand is our formulations are very specific to high performance use. So we don't make API oils. We don't have any. We only make oils that you would use, say, if you're drag racing a vehicle with methanol and boost, or if you've got a, you know, a 70 Chevelle, just a muscle car, and you need a higher zinc oil, you need that vehicle to live. We have an oil for that. I mean, we basically were big in Porsche. A lot of the Porsche guys with the Nicosil and the different cylinder liners, you know, we have formulas that work in that. So we are just kind of this independent oil company. And I always like, I guess it's not a great way to say it, but I always say we just make oil for the cool stuff, right? We don't do the commodity. Right.
The classic, you know? Cars and the,
yeah, and the classic cars, racing, and so, and all forms of racing, road racing. We have guys that, you know, I found the other day that use our oil for rallycross, which I thought was really cool, you know, because our formulas are based on a chemistry and a principle of giving you what you need for racing or high performance use, which is much different than off the shelf oils are today. Now, the off the shelf oils we have today are the best oils we've ever made for a daily driver, right? For a vehicle you use, you know, every day, but not for, you know, crazy, you know, spring pressures and everything we do to engines to make them faster. As soon as you start modifying a stock engine to make it faster, you need to talk to us, because the demands that those modifications are going to put on the oil are really going to be important to address. And generally people don't, you know?
Yeah. Modern oil is geared towards so many other things, and fuel mileage, emissions, all the stuff that we don't care about. So we care about horsepower and reliability. So you're calling this a racing oil, kind of it's that in the right context.
Yeah.
You care about horsepower and reliability, and that's why it's called a racing oil.
So without getting too sciencey, like what's different in your oil? Like off the shelf, high zinc, whatever, performance oil, what's different with your oil?
Yeah, there's other racing oils out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So just, I think coming from background that we have, right, we've learned a lot along the way about formulation. And I'll use air-cooled VWs as an example.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Hey, this is the audience, right?
Yes, exactly.
So, okay, what I do is this. Whenever we look at an engine, let's pull it apart. And so we just took an air-cooled VW, we pulled it apart, it's laying on a table in front of us. As a tribologist and a formulator, I'm not thinking about anything other than what is this application and what's different, right? What is different about this? Well, I go right to, let's start with the fact that they're all flat tappet cams. Mm-hmm. So because they're all flat tappet cams, you've got to have enough zinc, ZDP, as we talked about earlier, to keep that thing alive. All of our formulations, if I went through our oils, I just go check, check, check. We're good there, right? The second thing is VW engines, when I look at you know, it's got a factory gear drive, right? Yep. Like you're using gears, not chains, not belts, you're using gears. You've also got this oil pump, and I take it apart and I look at it and I'm like, man, these are gears. These mm-hmm. are gears.
Yep.
This isn't a piston. This isn't a small block Chevy or whatever, you know? Well, gears shear oil. And when I say shear oil, I'm talking about mechanical shear. So when you take an engine oil, and I promise I won't get super technical on this, but I'll stay above the line. But it may seem like I'm getting close. Yeah,
don't PhD us to death.
No, yeah, I promise. But what I'm saying is if you look at an oil, let's just say it's a 2050. Okay, so the 20 is the cranking temperature. It's, you know, you're going to cool that oil down, you're going to put it in a machine, and you're going to torque. It's like torque. You're measuring the torque. Will it crank? Will it turn over? The 50 is at 212 degrees F. It's a 50 weight. So to make it do that, right? It's not a straight 30. It's not a straight 40. It's a multi-grade. To do that, we put a polymer in it. And that polymer is made out of rubber, basically. It's ground up, heated, and put in the oil. So it's expand. Just think of it this way. It's expanding and contracting with heat, adjusting your viscosity. I kept that It's way deeper than that.
I know, but that's a super simple. I'm following you. That's super simple. My MPS education is following you. I'm on track.
Now, here's the bad part about that. That polymer shears. So as it expands out, okay, and goes through gears and cylinders with rings and things like that, you start chopping it into little pieces. Think about a rubber band stretched out. And you take a pair of scissors and you chop it in half. And then you're going to chop another piece off. You're shearing it down. Well, as you mechanically shear the VI improver and multi-grade engine oils, you lose viscosity. So your 2050 now becomes a 40, for lack of better words. So when I look at VW engines, I go, man, if I wanted to make something that would actually mechanically shear oil on purpose, this is how I'd do it.
bunch of gears and flat top and cams.
You know, and a great gear. My favorite one is the brass. You know, you got this brass gear, which is it's sliding, right? Because your distributor drive is at an angle. So that's even more shear. So as the oil is going through there, it is shearing. So we want a real shear stable oil. And just to mention this, just to keep it above that technical line, there's a series of tests we can. So when we build a motor oil, it's like building an engine, right? I could buy this crank, I could buy that crank, I can go these rods. Well, when I build an oil, I can buy this CDP, this base oil, that VI improver. And so we use an extremely shear stable VI improver in our formulas. We do this to prevent mechanical shear, so that oil will stay in grade longer. It's what makes our oils more expensive. I'm going to tell you, when you look at an off-the-shelf quarter motor oil and quarter driven, we're more money. But it's because of the raw materials we're using. So it, just to give you an example, a typical API oil might use a 35 SSI. That's kind of the test we use to see, you know, how shear stable it is. That's a real, that's good. And now they're going to 24. So the lower the number, the better. Well, we use like a 4 and always have. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, we use a very shear stable polymer in our formulas. And to be honest with you, I'm talking about two kind of formulas, because just to make it even simpler for air-cooled VW, when people say, well, what oil should I run? I have two choices. If you want to run a synthetic, I tell people to run our DT50, which is a 1550, and it's a full synthetic, and it's got high ZDP in it. It's got the shear stable polymer, and we use something kind of interesting with that I'll talk about in a minute, because it goes back to all the voodoo about VW lubrication. I mean, it goes up way back, but... Or our GP1, which is our pencil, that's our conventional, and it's the Pennsylvania grade, you know, base oil that's very polar, and it's kind of a tried and true thing from way back in the day. But a lot of people like to run a conventional in an air-cooled VW. I feel it's kind of from all the voodoo from back in the day, like never run a synthetic in an air-cooled VW, never, you know, so we have that as well. But that oil, where it really stands out is if you're running boost and if you're using methanol, because of its polar characteristics, it's very resistant to milking up with E85 or methanol or whatever. But it's also just a great oil to run across the board. I mean, if you went out right now to buy a quart GP1, it's going to cost you $10.99 wherever you buy it, a quart. You know, where our DT is going to be, oh gosh, I don't do the pricing on our stuff. I think it's like $15, $16 bucks a quart.
Right. Dead dinosaurs are always cheaper.
Yeah, always, you know. But then coming back to, we got this air-cooled VW out, right? And we've torn it apart. So we've talked about shear. We've talked about a flat type of cam. But let's talk about the other thing. It's got a cool, right? I mean, we got to keep
it. Yeah, it's using the oil as a coolant.
Yes, right. And so one of the things that, you know, I thought I'd come, you know, I'm that guy. I'm just a straight talker. One of the things that got me when I started reading the voodoo on the internet.
Well, the synthetic, yeah, everybody's going, oh, you can't run synthetic. It doesn't transfer heat as well and all of that. That stuff went on and on and on. And nobody could come up with a real answer to why. They just
assumed that's the case.
Well, they put it in and they said it ran hotter. You know, it's just like the painted case thing. Yeah. It's just these people, they just, can you trust them? I don't know.
Well, I'll shed some light. Now, let's go into hypothesis mode, because this is something I'm working on.
This sounds science-y.
It's a little science-y, but it's not bad. I promise you that.
It's a good science. I like this kind of science, yeah.
And going back to it, so I didn't, being a guy that's been into air-cooled VWs my whole life and working it driven, I didn't want to be the guy that just popped out into the air-cooled VW market all of a sudden and said, I got the best oil in the world and blah, blah, blah. I want to prove it. So one of the things that we did at Sick Week with all the Florida VW guys that were down there, Ben Anderson and Lester and all those guys, is we did oil analysis on their vehicles that week. So we put oil in there. Some of them, I didn't give them oil. I said, just run what you're running now. I want to get oil analysis. I want to see what this does to that these engines. And of course, some of them are turbo, some of them are NA, and there's always those variables. But testing to me is very important. Like, because to be honest with you, I always say this, and it sounds like a corporate like kind of cliche, but I believe it, is the best oil we make is the one we'll make tomorrow. I think that while we have great oils and we've seen great performance in air-cooled VWs, we can always make it better. There's something out there that we don't know is happening, and if we can discover that and create a solution for it, then we've really got we've moved things forward, and that's where we go back to that synthetic.
You don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know, and if you don't have test data, and we're gonna do it to you guys up at Six Summer in a few weeks. You know,
yeah,
we're gonna be testing your oil and matching that data with what we have from Drag Week and the others. And
well, I'm changing oil right now in my ride, and I'll know exactly how much beating I put on it when I give it back to you.
And what's great about Drag and Drive is we're kind of testing two things at the same time. It's not like, hey, all I do is make quarter mile passes or eighth mile passes on this motor. Okay, here's your analysis. Or a guy who says, well, I don't race. I just drive it to Cars and Coffee, or I go, you know, Home Depot or whatever. Drag and Drive gives us kind of the worst case scenario.
Oh, it's the worst.
We're going to get a great, and we have such good data from the VWs that ran Sick Week. But one of the things I don't want to forget to mention this is, so back in the day, synthetics were different than they are today. I've researched the whole heat absorption, heat transfer thing, and tried to kind of go back to where that originated from. And, you know, I can't go back in time, and I can't exactly tell you that that's not untrue, or there wasn't some truth to it. But what I'll tell you today is that, like, in our DT50, in our synthetic, we use a synthetic base oil that wasn't around back then, called an MPAO. So a PAO base oil was what you would always have known as a synthetic. It's a poly alpha olefin base oil, always used. Well, we're using these MPAOs, which are made differently. But one of the things, and we found this back, I wasn't there, but I know the story about these back in NASCAR, was they are extremely good at absorbing heat and rejecting heat. One of the things that they were doing in that testing, or one of the problems they were having, was they were losing valve springs because the valve springs would get so hot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, so they started putting sprayers on top of the valve springs and using this PAO type base oil and seeing that the synthetic motor oil with this PAO componentry to it was absorbing the heat and pulling it out of the valve spring, and the valve springs were living. And so what I've been working on a lot, and that's why, you know, I always say, well, I'm putting a motor together and I'm putting it together for drive and drag. I probably won't get out there this year, but my plan is to get out there next year. This motor will get a lot of testing on it. And so I'm working with a company, and we're putting heat sensors all over it, like in different places. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, we're going to put it on electrically. We're going to spin it electrically so we don't put combustion heat into it. And then we're going to run it. But the point is, let's see if we can measure heat absorption and rejection. And, you know, I've always been told, don't test for things that you already know the answer to. But we know that these newer synthetics, and especially the one we use in like our DT50, that's what they're prized for, is their ability to absorb and reject heat. So we got a lot of guys that are running them in not only air-cooled VWs, where they really became popular years ago and we started hearing about it, was with Harleys. Harley-Davidson guys.
Yeah.
And that's exactly, you know, where that came from is when you're riding a Harley, that motor's between your knees, right? So I've had Harley guys tell me, and this is like, I kind of take this with a grain of salt. Hey, when I went to that formulation, I could feel the motor was cooler because obviously I'm sitting on it, right?
Right,
and
yeah. When you come up to a stop sign and you go, holy smokes,
putting
out some heat here. I got to get moving.
Yeah, and I had the first guy that told me that, I was like, okay, yeah, that, you know, but then a few more start to tell you, but you know, it does come down to the basic principle of that heat absorption and rejection. So I think when you look at that voodoo, I call it voodoo. I call anything I read on the forum, you know, where guys are saying, no, you can't do this because of this. Well, sometimes the voodoo is correct, right? Like it, like,
well, that it's based in some facts, yeah, from somebody, some kind of
theory mm-hmm. behind it.
Yep.
But times change and products change and things go different.
Well, everybody ways. back in the day, when Mobile One first came out, it was like they marketed the crap out of it, and everybody had to try it. Everybody tried it. Mm-hmm. It's like this was the answer to all your oil problems when Mobile One came. It was expensive, but this was going to fix everything, and everybody tried it. And I don't know one person that said, yeah, it fixed nothing. You know, maybe they had good results, but they said, oh, now my motor leaks more.
Sure.
And I'm like, I don't know how it leaks more, but it leaks more. I don't know.
It does. So the molecules are smaller. They're like BBs versus golf balls, maybe, if you think of it that way, yeah, right? And they can get – and you know, but think about it, though. If you look at Prescott's book, which I have, if you read it.
Yeah, thank you. Shameless plug.
Buy my book.
Yeah, yeah. But if you do, like, you know, there's the little things in there that I always enjoy when I read. But, you know, when he talks about, hey, put the case halves together and put a flashlight in there. And if you see light, your case halves don't match.
Yeah,
you
no boy, no bueno.
Yeah, no bueno, you know. Well, okay, if you see the light, though, and remember, you always got to go back to in this conversation. This is back when people were driving them every day, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't today where we're building a 350-horsepower turbocharged drag and drive car. This is the car that got you to work, right? This is the car that, you know. And so, yeah, you go to a synthetic, and it's got a ton of miles on it, and your case halves have been wearing together. Well, if you put an oil in there that's going to flow easier, it's going to leak easier, right? It goes back to the theory, go to a thicker oil. But look at the other thing, if you come back to that time was, okay, so what's another benefit of a synthetic? It's got a really high oxidation heat stability, meaning when it gets hot, it doesn't sludge and it doesn't varnish as easily as a conventional. And that is totally true. But if all you have is like a 40 micron strainer in a stock VW, you're not extending your oil drain interval. I mean, crap is still in the oil. You got to change it. So you're not going to get that longer life and that benefit that's a benefit to a synthetic to some people. Like my wife go, oh, I can go 10,000 miles. I'm like, no, you can't, you know, but it says in the book I can.
I used to work at a Lexus dealership, and I think the Lexus came out with the 100,000 mile maintenance-free vehicles. These people bought these cars and didn't realize you needed to change the oil. They would go almost 100,000 miles without changing the oil. And then they'd come in because their motor locked up, and they'd be like, I didn't change the oil. I didn't have to for 100,000 miles.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's not it at all.
No, no.
That's not what that means.
That's not what any of this means.
But you know what? Lexus warrantied those motors. Go figure.
Yeah, marketing really screwed them.
But no, and so coming back to it, when you talk about just conventional versus synthetic, air-cooled VW. Look, at the end of the day, what I like about our synthetic is its heat transfer properties. And what I'm seeing in oil analysis is if somebody's running a turbo and put a bunch of heat back in the oil, there's a benefit to it there. And that's kind of the high level things that I'm seeing. But also we've had GP1, our conventional, do just fine. Kind of also comes back to if you get 10 guys together that are, especially 10 drag and drive guys together, and they all have air-cooled VWs, and they've all built them, and they have different levels of skill in how they build them. Some have turbos, some are NA, some are whatever. That is, you get all these different levels. What I'm really trying to do is when somebody says, this is the motor I have, this is what I'm doing, I can tell them, well, this oil of our oils that we have, this one is the best for your application. That's really the point. What are you doing with this thing? And so that's where like kind of all this data that comes back is really good. It hasn't even remotely made me think we need to change our formulas or do something different. They're great. It's just one is better than the other in a certain application. And that's all there is.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. If you're running this and you're doing this to this motor,
yep,
you should be running this oil.
No, you're not going to market your oil as a Volkswagen
air-cooled
oil.
Nothing. I'm not. No. You know why I'm not going to do that? Because I think the first second I did it, people go, this guy's full of it. And plus, I mean, we enjoy like our oils, like our DT50 and our GP1, which are generally what, you know, the two I'm talking about, man, they have so much love in so many other places. I mean, nitromethane funny cars and dragsters run GP1 because nitromethane, they dilute a lot of it.
Yeah, and it goes right past the rings. It pushes it right past it.
Yep, and GP1 works. That's our Nitro 70.
Yeah,
we have a lot of import drag, Honda drag drivers, you know, that, man, these Hondas, they run 7 second quarter miles, but they all run boost and methanol. So they love
crazy boost, 50, 60 pounds of boost.
Crazy boost. And I don't think there's a reason to market it as a VW specific oil. I just think there's a reason to let people know why we're different and why our oil seems to work better in this application. But it's all that good stuff that makes it work in other applications as well. You know,
well, this is the first opportunity that an industry has embraced the Volkswagen culture with a product that's kind of universal, like oil. It's very refreshing, I think.
Another thing, too, is that going to the auto parts store, trying to find a oil that fits the Volkswagens is few and far between. A lot of it's not on the shelf anymore. And
it's not.
You know, that's becoming a big problem here.
Yeah, so. Just to find something that's made for a classic car, that's made for something with flat tab, you got to go out of your way. You have to.
I mean, you could still go to some stores. They have it on the shelf, but there's not a selection.
Yeah, it's they have the oil. That's it. Yeah. Here you go. Yep. And do you trust it or not? I don't know. Where can our listeners find your oil? I mean, just let's start there.
So that's the one thing I'm going to tell you. We're hard to find because we're oil, and we're trying hard to change that. We'll probably never be in the mainstream auto stores.
Yeah, and that's fine. I think the market's too small to really worry about it.
It is. You know, we have a website. We have a lot of dealers across the country. Some of them have retail locations. Some of them, all the big parts guys, the racing parts guys, all have our engine oil. A lot of people buy it from their engine builder. One of our biggest customers at Driven are engine builders, like professional engine builders that are building racing motors. Sure. At all levels generally have it. A lot of times, though, our website's the easiest way to buy it. You know, you just get on there and you order and you go. And, you know, we're lucky. We're in Memphis and we're literally right across the street from FedEx. So, I mean,
that's why it always comes FedEx.
It does. And, you know, we just, it shoves across the street and it's there.
Fantastic.
So,
the oil's available at Jags and Summit and all those, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's probably people's easiest way when you're ordering something from them, just throw it on the order.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk a little bit about the website?
So actually, I'd love to talk about our website because we're changing it right now.
Well, see, I didn't even know that. I segued right into that.
So like one of our big focus at Driven kind of now that we're in our, well, it goes way back, but we're in our new building. We have a great team here. Like, we're a 20-person company.
Well, you got room to stick your Volkswagen in your office there.
In my office? I mean, how great is that, right?
My Volkswagen's not in my office.
Yeah, they'll kick it out of here eventually. But, we still, I always say this, and people find this strange. You kind of touched on it for a second. Before I go into our website, you know, we still answer our phone. And we don't have voicemail. Like, if you call Driven, somebody actually picks up the phone and talks to you. And I can't tell you how many people nowadays are like, well, you know, they'll call and they'll pick up the phone. You can get me. I'm like, Driven Racing. Well, can I help you or whatever I say? I don't know what I say, but what are you, a person? Yeah. You're actually talking to Bill.
Yeah. I'm not in India.
No, I'm right here. And the five guys that we have over there to answer the phone, they're all engine builders. They've all come from the performance industry. A lot of them came from comp cams. We have guys that answer the phone over there that could grind you a cam.
Wow.
By hand, probably. You know? And so when you call and you're like, hey, I got a flat tappet cam, you know, what should I be doing? I mean, you're really going to get those people. Our website is kind of something that it's fine. It does what it needs to do. But one of the things that we're trying to do is we love niche markets like air-cooled VW. That's a niche market. The Oldsmobile guys, they're a niche market. And
the Porsche guys, Harley guys.
Yeah, all of them. And so what we're really trying to do is create on our website a place that like an air-cooled VW guy could go, and there'll be a video there kind of talking about what we taught today, maybe this video. And it tells you, look, this is what you need. This is what makes us different. This is how to do it. You can go through that and just buy the oil. And if you have questions, you could literally pick up the phone and we answer. Or
that's send awesome. Email. No, that's something you don't. Nobody does that nowadays. Like,
no, I'd be lucky to send an email out and have them answer it at all.
Yes.
I would actually challenge people, and I've said it before. You know, call some other companies first, and then call us and ask your questions.
No, yeah. I can already tell you the answer there. No, that's not going to happen.
Right. Oh, I love it because I email Ashley, and she that's her name, right, Ashley?
Oh, yeah, everybody knows Ashley.
And she emails me back within seconds. And I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, oh, yeah. And then she has all these questions. And I told her about the podcast. And she's like, oh, Bill wants to be on your podcast so bad. I'm like, easy here, Ashley. Don't throw him under the bus just yet.
Yeah. I walk in and she goes, oh, you have to be on a podcast today. It's like, all right, here we go.
Whatever it is. That's awesome.
We like to know our customers. We don't ever feel we're going to be big enough that we don't know our customers. Like that we don't go to a race or we don't go to something and go, hey, there's Bob. There's, you know, whatever. How'd the oil work? You know, oh, I will maybe try this. Or it's different. And that's the luxury of being a company like us that just says, well, here's a piece of the oil business and we just want to be the best at that. And it's big enough for us. It's probably not big enough for the big guys. So,
right. You know. And I don't think the difference in price, like,
they're not far off of normal quart of oil. If I can find it in the stores, the price isn't that far off.
Yeah, it's $2 more a quart. Yeah. I mean, why not? Peace of mind, it's got to be worth $2 a quart, you know? Or even the fact that you guys answer the phone or support the Volkswagen scene. Yeah. Or, you know, any of that, you know, that's worth $2 a quart easy.
Well, also, you know, like our GP1, it comes from the oldest operating refinery in the United States in Bradford, Pennsylvania. That's a big refinery. We're probably one of their bigger customers, especially for these types of oil. And they love us. And what a partner. And, you know, with GP1, because it's that special base oil, it's got to come from Pennsylvania. It's got to have these properties. It's that unique cut that only comes from there. We literally put on the back of the bottle, hey, that oil comes from Bradford, Pennsylvania. It's blended, packaged there as it was for 50 years, right?
And that's your base oil. That's how you get your base oil.
That's what we do for the GP1. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because you can't. To us, GP1 can't be GP1 if it doesn't come from there and use that cut, because that's the prize cut that everybody always
wants. In a way, it's a classic oil that's been that's been rejuvenated and updated.
Oh, yes. Now, it's very updated. We don't still use the old additives that, you know, they used, you know, in the 70s or 80s or whatever. But it is. And you know, we're really proud of that product.
Where's Driven Racing Oil going? Like, what's the future looking at? Do you have anything in the works that are coming up here that you can talk about? I mean, if you can't, that's fine, but...
Oh, no, we always have, you know, a few things. Like, obviously, so racing oil, that's what we do. Okay, so that continues to grow into that. We're focusing on diesel this year. We're bringing out some new diesel products. And, you know, the reasoning behind that is obviously every race car gets to a track in a diesel pickup or a diesel motorhome or whatever. So we've had a lot of...
And those guys saw through a lot of oil.
They do. And we've got a lot of customers saying, hey, why can't I use this in my, you know, my motorhome or my toter home or my, you know, diesel pickup? Well, so we worked on that. So we have a bunch of diesel stuff that's coming out. I'm real excited about that. Working on some, well, you guys don't care about this, but a bunch of racing ATF fluids. So that's something we're focusing on. Now what you will be happy to hear, and Prescott kind of knows about this, is I'm going back and re-looking at manual transmission transaxle.
Oh, I just topped off the gearbox in the Dragon Drive with the new stuff.
Is it? Okay. Yeah.
So you have a new brand of gear lube coming out, is what you're saying?
It's not new, but it's tweaked. And so just we'll make this fast. But, you know, obviously a lot of the voodoo, right? We always talk about the voodoo or the stuff that I read is about GL4 versus GL5, right? And on all that stuff. So maybe that's for another show, but what I'm doing...
We'll talk about brass synchro rings and all the good stuff.
Yeah, brass synchros and everything.
Oh, Joel. I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, that's going to be a real at the edge of your seat podcast. Edge of your
seat. No, but it, you know, the funny thing is like, so that's Muncie's, right? In American Muscle Cars, they have brass synchros. So there's a bunch of them, and there's a bunch of people, not just air-cool VW people, but who say, well, should I run a GL4 or GL5? And it has to do with active sulfur and all this stuff. So we're kind of just finishing up and we're looking at that. And I think there'll be more to report on that. So in the future. So yeah, just something to watch from us, because I think that'll help educate people on, it's almost like the synthetic thing. Well, yeah, back then it was this, but this is now. So
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's cool.
So I'm going to test the hell out of that, that gear lube.
Cool. And whatever you can do.
And I know you don't have a guy, you know, in your Dragon Drive, you don't have a transmission builder except me for the testing. So I'm gonna test it.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, that's the best way. I mean, I always feel you can do all kinds of stuff on a bench or in a lab, but when you have, you know, 10 or 15 guys out there that are known for building certain kinds of transmissions or engines, it doesn't matter, and they're all saying this is the best stuff we ever used.
Well, I think between me and Chuck, because I just put the box in Chuck's car, or he put it in, but I just built it, and cool. He's running the same gear lube, this driven stuff. So we'll test it out.
Well, very cool. So I know you mentioned this already, but where is the best place to find your products?
DrivenRacingWorld.com.
Awesome. Also, check out Driven Air Cooled on Facebook. It's their new page dedicated to air cooled Volkswagen enthusiasts of all types.
Very good. Cool. Yeah, thank you for all the banners and the t-shirts and the stickers. I had Ashley get me some more stickers for the other car. So so right now my car's all stickered up, ready for sick summer.
But most importantly, thank you for coming on this podcast.
Yes, thank you very much.
Appreciate your time.
Guys, thanks for having me. Awesome. Thank you.
And then feel free to, if you like the show, feel free to reach out to us on our Gmail. We have we're at bcbugtalk@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, Brew City Bug Talk. Also, we started a YouTube channel, and basically we're just posting this on here with some images that we get from the people that the guests that we host.
Yeah, and we'll have Bill send us some
cool pictures.
Yeah, we'll steal some stuff off his Instagram, and we got Instagram too.
Another thing we have is our BC Bug Talk or Brew City Bug Talk on Instagram.
Yeah. Is it BC Bug Talk?
BC Bug Talk, Brew City. I think you can type in
they
both.
They can find it. Okay. They'll find it.
You can tell how well we are with
We'll steal some images from Bill's Facebook page.
Some viscosity charts, maybe. Yeah.
And we'll put that on the YouTube.
All right. Well, that's all we have for today's show. So thank you very much for listening.
Yeah. Thank you, Bill. And we'll catch you later.
Take care. Peace out.
Don't forget to subscribe to VW Trends Magazine for all the latest and greatest in VWs around the world. Visit VWTrendsMagazine.com to subscribe.